Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio. Excuse me. More discussion today on racism, mass incarceration, community violence, awarenesses, and lots more injustices affecting our communities and our families. We have on today with us once again, Tom John. Speaking more. We missed him last Thursday, but we have him today. Tom, are you on with us?
Yes, I am, Leona. I'm just going to need the first 5-6 minutes of this radio show for you to take over. I will be online. I'm finishing a meeting right now, but I am listening with you in the background.
Okay, so you continue with your meeting, and I will talk, and then we'll connect with you in a few minutes. And Tom, right now, in the middle of a meeting, as he mentioned last time, he recently got a new job, and it's kind of taken up some of his time, and so he's not been able to be on with us last Thursday. He is on with us today, and he will be on with us in a few minutes. But since we're going to be talking about some of these issues, and this has been an issue for some time now with the racism in this country and the mass incarcerations, the community violence that's coming from all of this racism and hatred, there's so much going on. But one of the things I want to talk about is with this coronavirus, this international deadly pandemic, many people think it's not as serious as it is. Many people think it's a political issue. And others realize it is serious because people are dying. So it's not that they're making it up. And some are just feeling like it's being blown out of proportion and some not. My problem, though, is the prisoners. These people that are incarcerated in these prisons across the country have been kept, many of them have been kept in their cells 22, 23 hours a day, and some of them even 24. And we all know that, first of all, some of these prisons are prisons within a prison. And when these prisoners are confined to their cells with this pandemic, it's prison within a prison within a prison. These people are not getting the air that they need. I know prisoners, there's one in particular I know from way back who had tuberculosis from being in their cells for 24 hours a day. I don't know what these people on the outside are doing. What the politicians are doing, I don't know what the families, I know families are trying, and unfortunately they can't do it on their own. And so many others that are trying, the advocates, these prisoners have got to have some air. They've got to have some time out of those cells more than they have been in. Another problem is many of them are in their cells without their properties, without their television, without anything to occupy their mind, with very, very little, which causes severe depression, which causes suicides. I don't know if we have political leaders in this country that are human enough to realize that this is a major issue. Sometimes people are focusing on abolishing the death penalty when people in prison not only serving long sentences, but some life and life without parole sentencing already have that depression. They already have that fear of never being able to see anyone outside of those prison walls. And unfortunately, as I always say, we are living in a country where prison is a stereotype. Every situation is different. There are wrongful convictions. There are prisoners who were victims before becoming offenders. There are prisoners that were defending themselves in situations. There were prisoners that were accused of things that they didn't do. And there were prisoners that were used, lied, and abused, and taken advantage of, and deceived. And this is what happens in relationships. And unfortunately, it can turn really bad because sometimes people do things that they regret as soon as they do it. But that's what happens when people are stumbled. So we look at mass incarceration, and there are people in prison that need to be in prison. Because they're repeat offenders, many, many serious repeat offenders, but there are also first-time offenders. And again, as I say, wrongful conviction. But with this pandemic, these prisoners don't need to be in their cells 22, 23, 24 hours a day. They need to be let out more. They need to be able to have some outdoor recreation, even if they allow six at a time. As they do let them out on the blocks, they let six out at a time. And most of the time, they're letting them out either at night for 1 or 2 hours at night or 1 or 2 hours in the morning, and that's it. I feel as though if they're going to be kept in their cells that length of time, they should be allowed to have their televisions. They should be allowed to have books. They should be able to have more in their cells than they're giving them. A lot of prisoners, too, I understand, are being set up because they're being put in cells where prisoners were formerly in them, where there were scratches on the metal. There were marks all over the place. And they're putting these prisoners in these blocks and in these cells and then alleging these prisoners are doing this themselves. And it's all because there's been much talk about releasing these prisoners subsequent to the pandemic. There's been a lot of talk about prison reform. And what's happening is a lot of the officials and some of the DOCs, Department of Corrections, they don't want to see that reform because prisons are for profit. They want to keep those prisons full. As it is now, they are forcing people who have single cell status to be double celled, even though there's knowledge and understanding that there are hundreds and hundreds of single cells that are not even being used. So this is what's happening in the penal system now, in many states, in many prisons, in Massachusetts as well. These are things that we need to try to get the politicians to understand. These prisoners need more time out of those cells. Because if they're going to get tuberculosis, if they're going to have respiratory problems, that's the same as the problems they're going to have with the coronavirus. The same symptoms, the same deadly possibility. So they need advocacy to get them out of their cells more often. Many people are stuck in their homes right now. Are you on with us now, Tom?
Yes, I've been listening the last couple minutes, and I just wanted to quickly tell you, number one, I'm back, and number two is I'm very blessed that you're such an advocate about single cells and stuff like that, because people don't really know and understand the importance, and, you know, it's a really big topic in prison, and I'm just glad that you're one that always brings that topic to awareness.
Thank you. Thank you. There's been so many suicides. There's been so many people that have been double-celled that have suffered the consequences. And there are a lot of people that can't be double-celled because of the psychological issues. Many have claustrophobia. Many have other issues like that, and that's sad. But Tom, if you have the time, if you can talk about some of the issues that you wanted to bring up before, and I know once you mentioned community services as well.
Yeah, there's a couple things I'm going to talk about. I'm just setting up my microphone. Just give me literally 60 seconds, and I will be ready. I'm sorry about this morning. Like you said, I'm glad that you reiterated that I have a. That's one thing I'll talk about. I have a unique opportunity with another job. So just, you know, really, really busy. But just give me 1 minute and I'll get going.
Okay. I actually at 1 o'clock or 1:15, I have to be on a Zoom, virtual Zoom meeting. But, yeah, these are the things that we want to talk about, the issues that are going on in the prisons and in the communities. And with this pandemic, so many people are isolated. Parents are trying to get their children back to school. A lot of these kids that have gone back to school, whether it be college, elementary school, the junior high or high school, being tested positive for the coronavirus. And a lot of these people are doing it, I think, because they're trying to get the kids out of the house because of the confinement. So if we have children and adults and adolescents that are in their homes and they're confined to their homes and they're having that difficult a time, we can all imagine what it is for the prisoners being in a single cell. And I know those cells are very small, and Tom can speak on that because he was in for 4 years, from 19 to 24 and 23, and he's 27, 28 now, but he knows what it is to be confined in those cells. And so we can understand, many of us can understand what these prisoners are going through when they have to be confined to the cell, that smaller cell, 23 hours a day, 22, 24. And this can't go on. We have no idea when this pandemic is going to end. And there's already been so many suicides in Massachusetts prisons. With this kind of attitude, with this kind of confinement, I couldn't do it. I could not be in a cell that length of time. Being in the home is difficult enough, but we have the ability to go from room to room. We have the ability to go and get something to eat when we want it or something to drink. But being in a cell when you can't do anything but stare at the walls or read a couple of books you've read over and over again for the past month or two, these things have to be addressed.
Yes, they do, Leona. You're right on the head with all of that stuff. I think, prison's it's a tough topic, and nowadays, thankfully, I am thankful for 2020 instead of, everybody looking at it as a negative year. I think this might be one of the most positive, things for a nation we've ever seen, and it's sad taking us until 2020 to actually have a conversation of, listen, somebody black or brown in America has it worse, so I think we're behind the eight ball, but we've eventually had to have this conversation, and I think now we're starting to understand in America there's certain groups of people that are just have it harder in life, have a way more uphill battle. I think it's universally recognized now when it wasn't. And prison's tough because people that go to prison commit bad actions. They commit bad crimes. They break the law, or they make poor choices. So going to prison, the narrative was, people don't really care. They don't want somebody to have a TV. They don't want them living a comfortable life. But when they say that, I really don't think it's because that human being doesn't have any empathy or they want that person to suffer their life. But I just don't think that they understand the repercussions, or they used to not to. That used to not be the norm. Well, now we're understanding. Now we have enough years of research. We have enough, psychology majors, sociology professors that have done enough research throughout the United States to understand. Just like myself, I did an armed robbery. So I did an armed robbery in a mostly white community. I think that most people in that community would probably think, yeah, he deserves to go to prison, because they can never understand picking up a gun and robbing somebody. So I think initially they're like, yeah, I think he could go to prison for a couple years. And, if they would hear that, hey, he's in there after a year and he's just locked in the cage because of pandemic and he can't use his TV, I really don't think most people would feel sad, or they would be like, listen, that's kind of his punishment. But they look at prison as a punishment, as, he's only in there for a certain period of time and then that's it. Where now the narrative has changed. Now the narrative is different. It's, does he deserve to be punished the rest of his life? Where I don't think every aspect of getting in trouble, going to prison, was always advertised. I don't think the probation and life after prison or before was ever really advertised. I think just the crime was advertised, going to prison, getting sentenced was advertised, and that was it. People weren't diving deep into actually the psychological effects, actually the percentages of people overcoming and living a quote unquote normal life, or just being successful in their community. People started noticing that prison was a death sentence. It wasn't how the norm in society was looking at it as, okay, you go away for a few years, or it's a punishment. Because when we're young, we relate to punishments, like, going in the corner and a timeout and grounded. You can't go out the weekend. Everybody else is having fun. You're sitting in your room. But we look at them ending, and we look at, well, we can still resume our life, and we're still going to have fun again. But we look at it as very short-term, and it's very negative, but, you know, you're able to overcome it. Well, prison is looked at, I think, as a punishment. Kind of in the same facet as, hey, you know, you're getting punished because you committed a big, big mistake this time, but you're able to still go have fun one day, and you're still able to live a normal life. And we're starting to understand that it is not a punishment. It is a life sentence from when you go into the courtroom in the state of, in the United States. And you have whatever state that you committed your poor choice or crime in going against you. You think about it. You have a state. It's a state going versus you. You have an entire state versus you. So the minute you're at that point, the whole state is versus you for the rest of your life. And it's proven that over time, without the resources, without the community being very accepting of people that are from prison, people that are black, people that are brown, people that have tattoos, people that, you know, talk in a slang, you know, terminology. And we see in the community that it is the state of whatever you are getting sentenced versus you for the rest of your life. From the time you get sentenced, from the time you go to prison, from the time you get out of prison, from the time until you die, that state is not accepting. That state does not give you many resources or opportunities to, quote unquote, live a successful life. So I think that's the big topic now. Saying, listen, we understand why people are going to prison. We understand that a person that does an armed robbery, no matter what, in the United States now, if they grab a gun and they go rob a gas station, we understand that that is an action where we have a certain percentage of people that are like, hey, you should serve a big punishment for that in life. You should not be doing that. But we also have enough people now in life to realize, unfortunately, the system that, you know, America has put into place, the system they put in a broken system. And I think even now, watching an NFL game this past weekend in 2020, every NFL game played a universal video of, in America, in millions, there's millions of people watching football now because they can't go to the game, they can't go to the bars, they can't go to things. There's as much people watching football as the Super Bowl. So and there's a video saying blatant that black people and brown people have had it worse in America, no doubt. Just, you know, just the rules, the Constitution, how America was brought up. It just was not brought up with black and brown people sitting at the tables discussing America. It just was not. Natives, nothing. There was only white people there. So by now, they're acknowledging that, like, listen, it is different. You know, all these white people saying it's fair, and all these different colored people saying it's not. We have to acknowledge that now. I think that people are now starting to acknowledge prison as well, saying, listen, I acknowledge somebody doing an armed robbery in my community as something I don't want, but can I look at that 18, 19, 20-year-old individual or that 30, 35-year-old individual that's a drug addict? Can I look at that individual that is a part of my community and say, I think you should struggle the rest of your life and be treated as an inferior human being based off of this armed robbery? I don't think many people are saying that. So there needs to be something where eventually legislative and the legislative and the lawmakers in our government, in our politics and politicians that are in our local communities, they need to get together and they need to accept that they were wrong. Number one, that they should not be sending people away in their community that is in their community that are higher percentage chances of certain races. They need to admit they're wrong for throwing these people, these amount of people in prison. They're just, you shouldn't have a community where people are doing negative things and getting death sentences, because prison is not, oh, I'm throwing them away in prison in years. This discussion is, I'm throwing them away in incarceration for life. We don't need to say prison for years. We need to say that this person is going to be incarcerated for life, whether they're physically incarcerated in prison or mentally or opportunity-wise incarcerated in their community for the rest of their life. That's what you need to be saying. So I don't think that the politicians and the people that are voted in power, I don't understand how they haven't had conversations. But it is 2020, and I think I'm thinking and I'm hopeful that eventually there are politicians that are going to say, listen, I don't feel comfortable being a governor or being a mayor of this whole city and throwing away 100, 200, 18-year-old kids every single year. I'm a politician in this community for a life, knowing that this 18-year-old kid, whatever they did, they sold meth, they sold heroin. Do I want that in my community? No, I don't. But do I think that this person, for a life sentence, basically the same thing as a murderer and a serial rapist? I don't think that's right. So I think that we need to have more talks about having system and having things in place, programs and resources in place to give our community, which they are, people that get in trouble are part of community, and they also are human beings that do quote-unquote normal things, an opportunity, but they're not a normal. You know, carrying a gun in the hood is not a normal. You know, people that are not from poverty or not from low income and brown and black color neighborhoods, they can't comprehend, like, carrying a gun is bad. Carrying a gun is getting in trouble. But carrying a gun in the hood of Chicago, in the projects of Chicago, really isn't the most mind-blowing thing in the world. But yet again, it's not the most mind-blowing thing in the world, but yet again, we have people getting life for it. So we really do need to understand that we got to have something in place where we're not just throwing away our brown and black people in America, specifically young men and young women, away in cages for a certain period of time, yes, but incarcerating them and making their entire life a uphill battle where they are not necessarily free in the world for life. You know, especially having probation officers that, you know, think about some probation officers in the, even the state of California, the state of Wisconsin, and the state of Illinois. Most of these probation officers are white. And to be a probation officer, you can't have a criminal record. You can't be associated with anybody, you know, with a criminal record. So I would say at least 90% of these parole officers, that a parole officer is in charge of somebody's life. They have power over an individual's life at such a capacity, they ultimately control the outcome of that human being's life if they really wanted to. And nobody really thinks like that, that is not on probation and does not have a parole officer. How would you like it if somebody was in control of your life? You just wouldn't like it. Nobody would. So on top of that, you have your community that is still against you because your sentence was to serve prison. That was for your negative actions, and you not only served prison time, but now you have somebody in control of your life while you are back in the community. That doesn't make you feel welcome. That doesn't make you feel free. And then on top of it, which it doesn't make, you know, people aren't going to sleep having nightmares about not voting, but voting is important. It's probably one of the most universal connecting things a community has, is when, you know, a community gets together for local elections and the big election, and you kind of cast your vote. It's something that's talked about throughout the community. It's on the radio. It's kind of throughout the conversation. And not only are, if you are a felon, you're not able to vote in that community, the same community you pay taxes for, the same community you're a law-abiding citizen again, and the same community that you bring you know, a positive aspect to. If you go up and vote in a local election the same way anybody else in your community votes, which I don't think anybody else is a better human being. I don't think they're getting accepted into heaven any faster than you. They get to vote, and that's it. And if you vote, if you do the same thing as they do, if you just vote, cast your opinion, you would go to prison. I would go to prison based off of how long I have on probation. Around 10 years. Around 10 years of my life, I would end up going be caged. I would have my freedom taken away again. It's different from not being able, I mean, different from not wanting to vote because you don't like who has, you know, been elected, or you're too busy to understand, you know, each candidate and what they stand for, so you're really not knowledgeable enough to vote. It's different than not voting than it walking up to a booth, and if you would vote, you would serve 10 years in prison. That just shows the community that it's a constant reminder during local elections and the main election every 4 years, and then the local election every year or two. That's just a constant reminder every once in a while of your community reminding you of that you are an inferior human being in this community, that you do not have the same privilege, that you do not have the same opportunity, that you do not have the same voice, and that your opinions matter a whole hell of a lot less than just the average Joe, let alone people that are eventually in power. So I know I've talked with a lot with no reaction and other opinions. So I just want to, you know, give somebody, give you a little opportunity to, you know, to cut in.
Well, I'm hoping next week we can talk more about the voting issues, because that's a major thing right now. People shouldn't lose their voting rights just because they're offended. But we have somebody that's on the line. Hello, can you state your name, please? Hello?
Leona, can you hear me?
Yes.
This is Chinupa.
How are you, Chinupa?
Well, you told me to come back on this week, so I'm back on.
We're talking about, Tom has been talking about some of these issues within the prison, and he's getting to the voting. And I want to do a topic on that next week, because right now I think it's very important that these prisoners be allowed to maintain their voting rights. There's no way and no reason. There's no reason behind it for them to be, for their privileges, the voting privileges, to be taken just because they offended. Because there's no way, nothing in court when they're sentenced that stipulates that their voting rights are no longer a possibility. And these people were born in this country. I was born in this country. My loved ones were born in this country. And others all over the country have relatives and friends who have been born in this country that ended up in prison for whatever reason and should not have their rights taken. And that's, this government is very, very wrong in that area. So I want to talk more about this next Thursday.
The voting rights one, right?
Yes. That's very important, because it's, you know, we were just talking about this pandemic and how the prisoners have been confined. And Tom was going further into some other issues, including the voting rights. And there's a lot that needs to be discussed.
Can I interject something here, Sister Leona? I had a bunch of tribal people from different reservations to call into your show today, from the Arapahoes to the Blackfeet to the Cheyennes, the Lakotas. And I was hoping that, because of, you know, the incarceration rates of people of color, from a perspective of what Native people, our Black brothers and sisters go through, and, you know, the Latinos and any other ethnic person of color, you know, not even, you know, I'm not going to, you know, give any type of understanding about white America's privileged kids, because they're the ones that seem to get everything firsthand when they're in an institution of learning. Because the prison system today, and has always been, even from the past, has been a designed, you know, intervention to neutralize the God-given rights that you were born with as that person. And the hard part is when people of color like ourselves come together and start expressing what white America has done, white America has turned this country, because of the corporations and all these elites that have wealth, they've turned it into a communist regime. So this country is a communist country. And they always condone other countries for being like that. No, they were all taught this from the way Americans did things, because Americans have always been an incarcerated people. Four ships arrived here, Mayflower, the Pinta, the Mina, and the Santa Maria. All four of these ships brought nothing but ex-cons, and they were all white. That might sound offensive, but it's the truth, and I don't care if it's offensive. So the brother here that's talking about how what I caught parts of when I got on the radio show this morning, I listened to how, you know, when we're not a privileged people. Let's just keep that in mind, because we don't qualify as being Caucasian folks, and we never will. We might be, you know, justifiable in using their language to communicate, but we're still not white. So my point to helping people in the listening audience today about prison, you know, issues with the pandemic and stuff, these were set up, orchestrated by both the federal government and the state, because they wanted to neutralize the population of people, whether they were elders and babies. And those are the only two groups of people that are dying at an alarming rate in this country. And not all of them are people of color. They're mostly white. When it comes to people of color now, every said reservation within the Western Hemisphere, and we're talking about North Dakota, South Dakota, Wyoming, Montana, and Nebraska, Native people are dying. Dying. I mean, it's just, it's unorthodoxly clear of how they did this. But we cannot remember and forget that understanding is this. They did this to us during when smallpox was issued to us through the blanket. No different than our black brothers and sisters, that experiment they did, you know, the Tuskegee people down there in Alabama country, by, you know, implementing syphilis upon them. Don't ever forget what this white man is capable of doing. That's a devil in true form. So when people are addressing issues about incarceration, this is a form of neutralizing your God human rights from being who you are as a free person. Everyone's entitled to carry whatever type of survival need on their own person, whether it's the gun, bow and arrow, tomahawk, knife. Those are survival things. Those are things that are essential in our everyday living. But because capitalistic control implements that discrepancy of not having, you know, your natural rights, which is your inherent independent status of that, you know, portion of what they call privilege, we are being violated with lawful processes practiced and guided by the system of injustice. And everyone knows this, but nobody's putting the blame on where it comes from. And from a Native perspective, when the brother was mentioned about people of color, all of us are in that same predicament, because let's be real, folks. Let's be real, Sister Leona. They want us people of color gone. That's what New World Order defines in its predicaments of how they practice and perfect colonial policies. They never, ever told you to abide by this name. They never told you to use this name because it was honorable. No, that's all American. And so our people today in general, even the brothers and sisters that are incarcerated, remember, there's children still being locked up for crimes against humanity that they never done. But it's the way America deems things, because it's about the elites. And they're going to eventually make this attempt where they fall. And as I said before in previous shows, we're going to have to look deep in our hearts to really look at ourselves if we're able to forgive them. And until we can understand that, I won't forgive them. I can't, because for all the atrocities that they have inflicted upon my people, from Maine to Florida, and you come inward to the states heading towards the Mississippi and the Missouri River out west, all my people that lived in those populated areas are no more. And that's a sad experience when I go out there and there's no reservation. None of my people exist. Yeah, they're mixed-blooded people, which America defines itself. America is one mixed race of people that's all half-breed. and then some. And that's the colonial practices of how they use law and incarceration codes as a guideline to neutralize your God-given human rights. If the great mystery himself went before a judge or even a president and said, okay, the two of you, what have you done to really serve me? And you know what's going to happen? They both will lie through their teeth to try to get ahead and say they really served the great mystery, when in fact the great mystery is going to tell them, and this is a true believer in it because I believe in the earth and the animals and my people and people of color. The great mystery will reject them and give them an unhealthy sentence that they will never, ever get out of. And I rest that understanding. Until we get back into the rights of what we have as an inherent people of independence, then and only then can we move ahead and start freeing our people from captivity. But it's going to take like-minded, like this young brother talking on today's show, yourself, Sister Leona, and many others, to take that challenge on. Because right now, white supremacy is trying to rule this whole place again. They're starting. America loves to repeat history, folks. Don't ever forget that. They're the most mortal enemy that the two-legged have in a country that belongs to turtles. Turtles. And we call it Turtle Island. Back to you, sister.
Okay, Chinupa, I don't know if you'd be willing to, but next Friday, if you'd be willing to come on the show. We have another caller. It may be someone that you... hello, can you state your name, please? Hello? Well, they're on, but they're not speaking. Next Friday would be the 25th.
Okay, if you want me to come back on the 25th, I'll be honorable to do that.
Okay. Okay. And that would be the same time as we have the show today.
Okay. Sounds great.
Thank you so much.
I'll let you guys handle your show. You bet you. We'll talk again.
Well, someone else is on, and I don't know if they're with you, Tanupa, but 406.
What number is it? Is it a 406? Okay, that's the Blackfeet people.
Okay.
From
that's
up there in Montana country.
You mentioned some others, too, and I'd like to have them on.
Yeah, the Arapaho people will be calling you from a 307 number.
Okay.
That's Wyoming State, and then 406 is Montana. And anything with 605 is the Dakotas.
Okay, good enough. I wanted to schedule this show for an hour and a half, but I have at 1 o'clock, between 1 and 1:15, I have to be on a virtual Zoom meeting. So I only scheduled it for 1 hour. But what I'd like to do is have you and the others come back on next Friday, and we can pick up on it where we left off with that.
Okay, next Friday sounds great. But can they listen to your show while they're on there?
Yes.
Okay, you can listen. Okay. All right, well, I'm going to jump off the phone, man, and I'll let you guys handle your business. And thank you, sister. I look forward to talking on the 25th.
Okay, as always.
All right, thank you.
It's always good to hear from you, man.
Yeah, thank you. Aho.
Okay, and the other person, I don't know if they didn't say who they were. Hello? It's a 406, so he probably knows. But, Tom, we were talking
Leona?
Before. Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, this is Jenny.
Oh, okay, yes. Chinupa just got off the line, and he's going to, I invited all of you back on next Friday.
Okay, good, because I had another elderly lady calling in from New Mexico at the 505 number. Her name is Etta. I don't know if she's on there yet or what, but she would like to come on next week, too.
Next, you can bring anyone on next Friday that you want. It would be good, and I'll be looking forward to it. And I'll schedule it for an hour and a half if you want.
Yeah, that'd be better.
Mm. Okay. It was nice having you on again, and we'll pick up on this next Friday.
All right, good. Talk to you next Friday.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Tom, are you there?
Yes, I am, Leona.
Okay. So, I'm sorry. You were talking about the.
No, it's fine. I'll kind of carry off where I left off at. I know that next week we are going to talk about voting rights, and I'm very excited that we're able to do that next week. I'm actually doing a speech at my I'm speaking for my college about voting rights, and we should be getting a couple hundred, maybe even over 1,000 people on the Zoom meeting. So I'm very excited for that, and I will give out the details next show or the show after. It's coming up in October in the beginning. So I'm excited about that because it is a topic, and even though I am able to talk about it, I'm still new. The one great aspect I have in life is I do have the experience of going to prison and dealing with the system. That's what I want to do in life. My whole life, I know the rest of my life is going to be associated with prison. No matter what, I can't escape it. If you would have told me this growing up, I would have probably walked away and never talked to you again. But that's the way my life is going to go, and I've accepted that many years ago, because there's no way of going around it. When going to prison at the age I went to, for how long I went to, is going to have a shape on the rest of my life, whether it's my mannerisms, it's my views, it's my beliefs, or it's just the repeat reminder that I went to prison. Everything in my life reminds me I went to prison, as far as not voting, having a PO, dealing with police officers in America, being on probation, interacting with other students in college after serving years in prison. It's different. So I've accepted that a long time ago, and I have a lifelong passion to just speak, bring awareness, and help out people, that man or woman that has been incarcerated, because it's a everyday struggle. So we were just talking about it, and voting rights is a topic that it's never really came up in my life. You know, even in prison, voting didn't come up many times. So it's not a topic I've spent a long time doing research on or discussion, but I can speak about it solely on being part of a percentage of people in America that have their voting rights at least taken away. I can talk about firsthand what that does, as far as what it makes me feel like a human being, how it makes me feel in my own community. So that's the good part, where I'm not just a college kid where I got to go do research on voting rights and not voting rights, and all my bit of knowledge is me looking it up on a computer or interviewing somebody or asking. Everything I'm saying right now is just, it has no right or wrong answer. Hopefully it's my point of view of what not voting means to me. And I am in the percentage where, whether or not I wanted to vote, if I would vote right now in America, I would do about 10 years in prison. So I can talk about that. And I can talk about what I want to see happen, because out of everything dealing with getting sentenced, going to prison, doing prison, getting out, being on probation, I'm going to be honest, just being able to vote on the spectrum of what's important in life and what you want to change and all the hardships, like, let's be honest, it's not in the top 10. It's not even in the top 20. People are not having nightmares about not being able to vote, but it is just one of many aspects of the inhumanity that our society has on people that has been to prison. It's not a fair shot. They don't get a fair shot in life. And if you think that if somebody breaks a law to an extreme where they're able to go to prison, if you think that they should just be deemed the rest of their life and they should have a hardship and just be mistreated and treated as an inferior human being, well, honestly, you're going to hell, because it's 2020, and we all know now there is some type of God, whether or not you want to say you're 100% religious or whatever the case may be, but there is some type of God. We are human beings. We were created, and you can't give me an explanation about how complex a human being is and not understand that somebody created us, or a higher power created us. So if you really think that people that commit, poor choices deserve to be sentenced to life, you're a very negative individual, and you're probably not bringing too much positivity to the community and to everybody surrounded by you in life. So that's number one. But I don't think most people want people sentenced for life because they understand that poor choices can happen. They understand that they have family members that do poor choices. And I think everybody can understand kind of relating. Like, you know, most people are like, damn, I really did drink and drive one night. Like, what if? What if that one percentage of what if I would have hit somebody and killed them? That would probably be something that I would have went to prison for, you know, and things like that. So my awareness is just to bring up that it's a life sentence. And now that the voting is so such a big topic, I don't want it to lose steam, because after this election and Trump gets elected or Biden gets elected, we'll talk about voting rights for a little bit. And then just like always, it will, the discussion will lose heat, it will lose steam. Many people, you know, normalcy will be back hopefully in 2021. And all of these discussions are going to lose steam. And I don't want that to happen. I want people to understand how important it is for these individuals who go to prison in America, and these individuals that are in prison in America, that there are hundreds of thousands and millions of people that are suffering. Yes, there are millions of people that are suffering outside of prison, homeless, that has nothing to do with prison if they've never been. I understand. But my goal is to at least bring some sort of resources, awareness, attention, and positivity towards these type of people, which I am one of these people. And voting is just another way to do that. It's another way that America suppresses our people. It's another way that America suppresses this population. It's another way that Chulupo is just saying that America wants, you know, brown and black people not really having that much power, authority, and basically just out of the equation. So voting's just another aspect. We see LeBron James and the NBA taking voting right initiatives very serious and doing a great job with bringing awareness to that. But as far as me, the last thing I'll say, because I'll save the rest of the show for something else and next week's topic, next week's show, we can spend more on that topic. But the last thing I'll say is it's another aspect to bring us down. As simple as that, in layman's term, if I was just sitting in front of somebody, in front of everybody, what not being able to vote does, it's just another aspect that shows us we mean less in the community, we mean less than our neighbors that haven't been to prison, where we're living in the same block as them, paying the same rent as them, working jobs, giving back to the community, if not more. And yet again, our community just reminds us every once in a while, a couple times throughout the year, hey, you know what, you're a little less important than that person. It's just one aspect. And then on top of it, our community gives us a parole officer that has to go through no qualifications in life to be a parole officer besides have a GED, to be in control of somebody's life. That's just another way our community that says, hey, you really don't matter. You're really not that important. So that's just what voting does. And we just, you know, it shouldn't be like that.
I'd like to bring up two subjects that you just talked about. First of all, with the voting and when you put power, in the hands of somebody that's, like you say, with the GED or somebody that really does not have the education or even the wisdom, that person is so insecure that when you put power into someone's hands like that, they go crazy with it. You know, it's almost like they don't have the mentality to do the right thing, but they have the ignorance to do anything. But I wanted to go back real quickly. I feel voting rights, not only for ex-offenders, but I think voting rights for all offenders, whether they're still incarcerated, whether they're serving life or 1 year, I don't think that anyone's right to vote should be taken from them when they are born and raised in this country. That does, and there's two states, again, two states in this country that never took away the voting rights. And there's other countries that never took away the rights of their prisoners. This country is so ignorant that they are going to take away the voting rights because they can't get enough vengeance and retaliation. So they want to take as much from these prisoners these incarcerated individuals, whether these are fallen individuals, stumbled individuals, or just plain whatever, they want to take away everything, including that. And that is the most ignorant, that is the most cruelest, inhumane thing that they can possibly do. You also mentioned that people don't understand in the prisons. They don't understand. And you know what? Look at how many years it took them to actually believe that there is racism in this country, that prison, that people are actually getting shot down and killed by people in uniform. They didn't realize it, but now it's out in the open. These people have gotten so bold and brave and criminal-like that they're killing in public. So if this is the people in this country are finally seeing it for themselves, they're finally believing that this is really happening. Well, they need to look at it in the prisons as well, because the same thing goes on in the prisons, the same violence, the same cruelty, the same deprivations and harassments and provocations and torment, torture, everything. And people don't see it because they're on the outside. And I'm sorry, we got a sick and sad media outlet. When we get all these young people in the media that are so busy trying to make themselves look pretty and talk about these little fish in the sea, and they don't even report the news that they should report, unless it involves, unfortunately, the death of a law enforcement or a prison guard or whatever. They need to start investigating into why these things are happening. And I'm sorry, but they need to put older people in the media if these young people don't have enough sense to know what news is all about. But that's what I feel. And I feel people have the right to vote. People do have the right to vote. If they were born and raised in this country, they at one time worked in this country, paid taxes. They do all these things. Because they committed a crime and they're serving their sentence in prison, that is punishment enough, taking away their freedom. But to take away their rights to vote is not the way to go. And it's mentality of putting power in the wrong hands. Whether these people are wealthy or they're poor and they got all of a sudden they get this little bit of power and it goes to their head, their ego takes over.
I completely agree. The best analogy I think of it is with marijuana. You know, there's this guy called Pat McAfee, and he's a ex-NFL player, and I listen to him all the time, and he's a great guy. And he was just recently talking about how basically marijuana, how it was viewed, think about it, you know, in football in 1960, or all these people in power, you have to first think about people in power, and the NFL is relatable to the United States. It really is, as far as the owners. There's 30 owners out of 32 that are white billionaires. So, and then, you know, there's no black owner. So you have to, you really have to understand the NFL is a multi-billion dollar industry. It's one of the most powerful businesses in the world, if not the most powerful. And it's ran by all white people. Old money, rich white people. That's it. That's at least all the common denominator. And then you can go to different things, but that's the common denominator. And I think we can say that is the common denominator with America right now. And it has been, even with Trump. Trump has said more about the guy that has killed the two police officers than he has said about George Floyd, Jacob Blake, and basically the 20 black people. Breonna Taylor and everything. He's sent more tweets about the police officer. That's honestly, and I don't really like to get into politics, but I do. But that makes me want to throw up. That is our president of our United States, and you know, he kind of is showing the stereotypes of what a old white man is. So that came from money. So unfortunately, you can't hide that, you know, forever. And just the way the weed, marijuana and weed were looked at in 1960, 1970 in the NFL. If you had a player that, you know, was sitting there smoking weed on the weekends and that was publicized, most people would demonize that person. Like literally demonize that individual. You know, he could go to prison and he's breaking the law and he's just the most horrifying individual there is. And the way marijuana was looked at when it first came legalized in the country, It was a big experiment. People forget because it's so open now, and I live in California, and there's weed stores. You can just walk into a weed store and buy weed and go outside and smoke it, and a cop can walk right by you. And 99 out of 100 times, the cop is going to continue to walk right by you in these states that where it's legalized, where at least growing up back in the day where most people can relate or the people that are in power, that was so not the case. You were smoking a weed in public. Do you know how absurd and mind-blowing that would be for them to fathom growing up? So no matter what, these are their norms. And that's where I'm trying to get at in the last 2 minutes of this conversation is these are their sole norms for literally over half of their existing life. And then all of a sudden, weed is legalized. And now in the NFL, like somebody fails a drug test, it's the penalties are – no, nobody even thinks twice of it, of somebody smoking weed every once in a while. So, and there's finally even conversations about letting it into the NFL because of people don't want to take pills and conversations. And my point is, that's the way voting rights are. All the people in power, it is not normal. They have never once thought about or experienced or had the conversation about letting people from prison have rights, have votes. It's not the norm. And I think by now in 2020, we do need a new generation, and we do need people to make it, to make enough noise, because you know what? That's the only reason change happens. You know what? If there were in the NBA, if there were no black people in the NBA, there was no black people in the NFL, if it was like 1940 again, where in every single professional sport there were only white individuals, if every single actress or actress damn near, beside unless they needed to play a slave part or a negative part or a lesser role, was all by white people, these changes wouldn't be happening. The reason why these changes are happening are because black men and black women of power have come up and have risen, and they have a platform, and they have resources, and they have, and it has taken time. Like you said, it's already 2020, and this is the first nation discussion we've had of, like, racism and black people getting murdered. Like, are you kidding me? I've never had this discussion in my school in my entire life. I've been going to school since in the mid-90s, and I've never had a discussion I have now. So you're telling me 30 years I've never had a discussion? This is a long time. And the only reason it's happening is because people of these colors and ethnic groups have made it to a certain level to at least have these conversations. And I think the same thing needs to happen for, like you said, people need to advertise it. NBA players, even though they're not from prison, they have the platform to advertise it. And we need them to step it up. We need the media to step it up. And we need people from prison to step it up and start opening up the doors and getting enough resources where they need to start listening to us. And that's the last thing I'll say. This week I'll be ready for the voting rights, and I appreciate it, Leona.
Thank you so much, Tom. And we'll hear more from you next Thursday. I thank you so much for being on. And we've got to pick up on this because this has been a very interesting topic. And unfortunately, I have to be at another virtual meeting in about 2 seconds. But thank you so much. We look forward to having you back on next Thursday. Thank you so much,
Tom. All right.
Tom.
Have a good day.
You too. Thank you very much. We are now signing off, everyone. Thank you for listening in, and we will be with Tom next Thursday. Thank you.